Hello, everyone. Yeah, it was a wonderful weekend in Seattle. It was a great weekend. It was fast. I flew out on Friday and flew back on Sunday. But we had, I don't know, somewhere between 20 and 25 people show up at Steve Gore's house, and it was just a wonderful weekend. But I'm happy to be back now. And I'm happy to be here with the 7 Steps to Awakening. And today we're going to be starting with quote number 93. And I am giving you a link to the journal entry for number 93 right now. And of course, before we go in and start looking at this, I'd like to take a moment of silence. So if you all would join me in that, I would appreciate it. Amen. All right, we're going to begin with number 93. And as usual, I'm going to read from the 7 Steps to Awakening first. Number 93 is on page 30 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. And the quotes that we're reading right now are under step one. And specifically, they're coming from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Let's see, I don't have as much. I'm on a temporary desk here because I think I mentioned there's construction going on downstairs, so I've moved up in the kitchen and I don't have as much room for the mic and the keyboard and the book. I'm in a reduced space here, but we'll make it work. Quote number 93 then from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. Stay beyond all thoughts in silent being awareness. Again, he says, stay beyond all thoughts in silent being awareness. I didn't notice if anyone new entered the room. I will give the link again just in case. This is the journal entry that I wrote after contemplating this Nisargadatta quote, and here is the journal entry. Thoughts interpret what is seen, heard, smelled, tasted, and felt, and therefore make a story about it. Stories are for characters. Specific characters may like or dislike based on interpretation, react one way or another based on interpretation. A character is a false self, and thoughts or interpretation is the character's script. All of this covers pure beingness, which is true self. Learn that all thoughts are meaningless because they are for the character, and the character isn't real. Disregard the thoughts the character interpretation. Experience, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and feeling from pure being. Notice the same pureness in each experience, the same pureness as is in the beingness that I am. If interpretation appears, notice it from being. If interpretation is temporarily believed, notice believing from being. Now again, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj only said, stay beyond all thoughts in silent being awareness. But you can see that as I contemplated those few words, great clarity came. The clarity came that, for the most part, all thoughts are interpretation story that belongs to the character or the false self. You know, for example, you know, there's something every day. I think you guys know that. Just every day, there's something. And today, here, I got an email this morning from Delta Airlines. And they've changed a flight schedule in June. Now, usually flight schedule changes are not a big deal. But this time they changed the flight schedule to make it 3 hours earlier. And what's happening is four of us are planning to fly on Delta from JFK in New York to Denver on our return from our Israel trip. And our Israel flight doesn't get in until 3:20, and now this Delta flight is leaving like at 4:05, and there's just not enough time between the flights, especially since we have customs. So the fact that they've moved it 3 hours means it just doesn't work for us anymore. So of course there are things that I need to do, and I've already started. I need to call Delta, see what our options are. Present the options to everyone else and make a decision. That's very simple. That's just moving about. But the false self wants to do more than just that moving about, as you can imagine. The false self, well, for me, it tried to create a couple of stories, but I will be honest, the stories only lasted an instant and I stopped them. So they did not run in my mind. But just to give you an example of how the stories were running in my mind. Unfortunately, I got to tell you another little technical detail. Three of us, Danielle and Susie and I, booked these flights months ago through Expedia. And Jasmine only like about a month ago decided she wanted to go. And Expedia wouldn't book her, believe it or not. Their online system wouldn't book her because she was only 15. And there was the appearance that she wasn't traveling with an adult because my flight was already booked. And, you know, the system just didn't get it. So I had to call Delta to put Jasmine on the same flight. So three of us were booked through Expedia. And then the child was booked separately through Delta. Which means we're dealing with two different travel agents here. So the story that wanted to start running right away in my mind was, well, what if, Delta says I have to go through Expedia for those three tickets, and I'm able to make one change for the three of us, but then by the time I get to Delta, I'm not able to make the same change for Jasmine, and now the kid isn't with me, you know? Now, that only lasted an instant. The thought came up, and I saw that, and I did what I just now did. I laughed at that. I realized that was just a character story. You know, that was just imagination. You know, I had no idea what was going to happen, and I needed to just put the thought aside, and I did. But it gives you enough to see that the story was specific to the character, right? The story of the daughter being, you know, somehow not able to get on the same flight, some separation happening in JFK, it was specific to a mother. Now, I don't know if there's a story running in Danielle's mind around this or if there's a story running in Susie's mind around this. I've only emailed them and told them our options, but let's just make up stories based on those characters. You know, Susie is someone who has given notice she's going to be leaving her job soon. In fact, shortly after we get back from Israel. So maybe just based on that situation, the story that ego will create in her is, well, what if somehow this works out that we have to spend more money? You know, what if Delta says, well, we can't accommodate you, we have to give you a full refund and you need to book with someone else, but now that it's months later, those people are charging, you know, at least $250 more per ticket. We can't get those same early bird prices. You know, maybe, I'm just making this up, of course, maybe that would be her character story. Another option that we do have is that we could stay, just go ahead and spend the night in New York City, and Delta can reschedule us out early the next morning. So that's one of the options I've presented to them. And Danielle is very, very shy, if you know Danielle. So maybe, again, I'm making this up. I have no idea what's going on with Danielle. I don't even know if she's read the email yet. But maybe, based on her character story, maybe there's fear thoughts about, oh no, am I going to have to share a room with Susie? You know, in Israel, she's staying with her mom, who she knows. But what if in this overnight, she has to stay with Susie, and she doesn't know Susie and she that well, and she's not comfortable with Susie, and the fear thoughts start coming around that. You know, just using this little example, you can see how the stories are very character specific, right? They reinforce that I am this person. That's what the stories do. And they're very specific to the person, which is why they capture our attention so well. But of course, the whole time we're listening to whatever stories are playing out for us, we are solidifying the idea that I am this person, I am this character. And as I'm solidifying the idea that I am this person, I am this character, I am simultaneously fully losing sight of my truth. And so that is the reason why we need to, as Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj says, stay beyond all thoughts in silent being awareness. Because we cannot be caught up in whatever the current character script of the day is. We can't be caught up in that and dealing with that in that way and know who we are too. Now, I am doing the course workbook as a part of my CMC ordination program, and this morning, shortly after this email came, it was time for my daily phone call with my partner this month, Nikki Dobson, and we looked at today's workbook lesson, which was absolutely perfect, because today's workbook lesson is only God's plan for salvation will work. And of course, it goes right into how, you know, the ego's plan for salvation is for everything to work out perfectly in form. You know, like imagine, you know, Delta just happens to have another flight we didn't know about that's 2 hours later, and it works out perfect. No changes are required except moving us to that later flight, right? You know, that's what ego says. Ego says there has to be some kind of a solution in form that perfectly suits me in order for me to be saved. But we all know that even if there is a solution, you know, by the end of this day, we could all agree that to stay in a hotel room, that could be taken care of, and the problem of the day could be gone. But we all know that tomorrow morning, there's going to be something else. And the day after that, there's going to be something else. You know, there's, like I said at the beginning of this little discussion, there's always something. So that's the ego's seek and do not find. Some problems we seem like we can't solve. Some problems we can't solve. I know there are people right here in this room now that feel like they've been dealing with the same thing nearly their whole life. So some problems it seems like can't be solved. Other problems we solve, but then just another problem appears. Solve and another problem appears. So that's the ego's seek and do not find. Whenever we're looking for anything in the world to be a certain way in order for us to be happy, well, that's not God's plan for salvation. What is God's plan for salvation? Well, it's to realize truth. To realize who we are and what is true, which is really the same thing. And again, we can't do that by being caught up in the ego story. The problem of the day, or the problem of the month, or the problem of the decade, or even the problem of the lifetime. Because whenever we are caught up in that, we are reinforcing, we are solidifying the idea that I am this person. And I cannot solidify the idea that I am this person and realize my true self at the same time. So Sri Nisargadatta says, stay beyond all thoughts in silent being awareness. And I'm going to take a drink of water and then we'll just read the journal entry, which is a little longer, but we'll go ahead and read that again. Thoughts interpret. Keyword, they interpret, right? So again, in my scenario, my thoughts would want to interpret this problem of the day regarding the thought as, oh no, what if I can't work the same thing out for me and for Jasmine because we have different travel agents we're dealing with. Susie, maybe it's a money issue. Danielle, maybe it's a shyness issue, right? It's all personal interpretation to reinforce the character, the false self. Thoughts interpret what is seen, heard, smelled, tasted, and felt, and therefore make a story about it. Stories are for characters. Specific characters may like or dislike based on interpretation, react one way or another based on interpretation. A character is a false self. Thoughts or interpretation is the character's script. All of this covers pure beingness, which is true self. Learn that all thoughts are meaningless because they are for the character, and the character isn't real. Disregard the thoughts, the character interpretation. Experience seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and feeling from pure being, right? Experience, you know, a change in flight schedule from pure being. Notice the same pureness in each experience. The same pureness as is in the beingness that I am. If interpretation appears, notice it from being. And I would say that's what I did this morning when that story tried to be born. I noticed it from being, and as a result, the story died very quickly. If interpretation is temporarily believed, notice believing from being. And this is where you may be practicing rest, accept, and trust, because if you temporarily believed whatever the story was, then there might be some fear or something that was made out of that believing. And then you'll need to move into, you know, rest, accept, and trust, watching the fear, letting that move on, right? Okay, let's scroll down and to the left, just above the dark gray area at the bottom, and you'll see a little number 94. And you can click on that. I will go ahead and post the link in the room as well. And I'm going to read number 4 from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening. Again, this is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And number 94 is this. The answer is not in words. Very short and simple. The answer is not in words. All right, let's look at the journal and see what I wrote after contemplation of that very brief quote. The answer is not in mind. Therefore, the answer is not in understanding concepts. Cease all attempts to understand. Be happy not understanding. Be happy not understanding truth. Be happy not understanding your feelings, your actions, your experiences. When one is happy not understanding, one loses interest in interpretation, which is the mind's feeble attempt to understand. All right, so Srinivasagadatta Maharaj said the answer is not in words. But as I contemplated that, it seems like the way it was received in my mind was as if he was telling someone who was continually asking questions, maybe metaphysical questions, or questions like, why am I not happy? Or questions like, why won't my mind shut up even though I want it to, right? And they kept asking him, and he kept for a time giving answers, but at some point, you know, the asking just continued and continued. And the only response he could give was, the answer is not in words. I cannot explain this to you. Which for me was the same as, the answer is not in mental understanding. The answer is not in mind. It's not in understanding concepts. There was a time when some understanding was necessary for me. There's no doubt about that. But I feel now like the purpose of the understanding was to get me to the point where I was just willing to let go of whatever. without understanding. It's like the intellectual understanding was a bridge. And it was a bridge to get me to be willing to let go without understanding. You know, there was a time when, if that story had arose in my mind this morning about, you know, what if I get one solution for Susie and Danielle and I through Expedia, but then I can't get the same thing with Jasmine through Delta, right? And that story would have, first of all, it would have gone longer at an earlier time. I would have been engrossed by it. I probably would have got very fearful. And after I got myself upset, then I would have noticed that I had fallen into ego, only after the emotions were taking over. But then I really, before I could just let the story go, because the story would seem like such a realistic possibility to me, a reasonable fear, it would have seemed like a reasonable fear, I would have needed to understand, why am I afraid here? I would have needed to understand. I would have been looking at that, trying to figure out, what is it here that I'm really afraid of, so that I could logically understand why I should let go of this story. And I mean, now I can't even, I used to do that process a lot, but now I can't even imagine how I would have looked at it. Let's see, you know, maybe I would have, I don't know. Maybe I would have ended up going down the thought process that the more fearfully I think, the more likely I am to attract something that is fearful. And therefore, it's in my best interest to drop this fear story now and move into trust. That's probably where I would have gone. And by getting to that conceptual understanding that, you know, by thinking fearfully, I'm more likely to attract something fearful to my experience. Therefore, I'm better off dropping the fear story and moving into trust. That then would have been the reasoning or the conceptual understanding that would have allowed me to let go of a story that was hard to let go of. Because now I have an understanding of why it's in my benefit to let it go. But now I don't need that. I don't need that understanding. I don't need concepts anymore to convince me to let go. As soon as I saw the story building, I knew it was a story, and that was enough to let it go. No understanding, no having to look at it and come up with some kind of a mental agreement that it should be let go. Just the willingness it alone is big enough. And at some point, we all have to get to that point, maybe, you know, not immediately, like I didn't immediately, but we all have to get to that point eventually, because the mind is never going to understand everything. There are some mental concepts that can be given to us that are helpful, that will get us started on the process of forgiveness, the process of letting go, the process of changing our mind. But there isn't an answer for every question the mind's going to ask. So there isn't enough answers to get us to the eventual point of what I'll call total surrender or total letting go of self. And so we need to be able to go with just willingness alone and not understanding. So at some point, that temporary bridge of having intellectual understanding, it does need to be let go. Because otherwise, what was helpful in the beginning is going to become an obstacle later on. Because the questions we start asking, there won't be answers for. And they're going to, although they may have helped us to let go in the beginning, the fact that there won't be answers later, it's going to hold us back from letting go later. So again, the answer is not in mind. Therefore, the answer is not in understanding concepts. Cease all attempts to understand. Be happy not understanding. Be happy not understanding truth. Be happy not understanding your feelings, your actions, your experiences. When one is happy not understanding, one loses interest in interpretation, which is mind's feeble attempt to understand. Okay, we can scroll down again and to the left. I don't think anyone new has come into the room. So if you just click on number 95, I don't think I need to post the link this time. And of course, I am going to read the Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj quote first from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This is quote number 95. Some events purify the mind and some stain it. Moments of deep insight and all-embracing love purify the mind, while desires and fears, envies and anger, blind beliefs and intellectual arrogance pollute and dull the psyche. So he's really, of course, saying that there are more helpful choices about what we do with our mind and less helpful choices or even hurtful choices. So let's read his words again and then we'll go to the journal. Some events purify the mind and some stain it. Moments of deep insight and all-embracing love purify the mind, while desires and fears, envies and anger, blind beliefs and intellectual arrogance pollute and dull the psyche. All right. Number 95 in the journal says, devotion purifies the mind by pulling it into the heart. Therefore, time spent in devotion each day is valuable to awakening. Allow this most precious time each day. Reduce to elimination time spent in ego feasting activities, such as meaningless conversational chatter and meaningless mind wandering or mind and personality focus. Ego feasting activities go counter to awakening, and so they are not wanted now. So again, one thing that I know about myself is that it is very, very helpful to spend time in devotion. I've even, since I've come back from India, where I was in devotion for 3 weeks in India, when I came back from devotion, I, for the first time ever, created a little altar in my house. It's actually somewhat of a subtle altar. You know, someone that isn't on this spiritual path, you know, could walk into my house and they wouldn't even recognize it as an altar. You know, it's just a table where I have a couple of plants. I have a little statue of Jesus, a little statue of Ramana. There's a Bible there. There's a little statue of the lion laying down with the lamb. There's a picture of Ramana there. But, you know, it doesn't have incense or candles or, you know, any of the stuff that really makes it look like an altar. It just looks like a table with some things on it. But I also bought myself a very short meditation stool. And some of you know I also bought myself a rosary because I like to hold things in my hands. A very nice rosary. And one of the things I like to do is just sit on that meditation stool and in front of that altar and just be in devotion. Just be, even if it's only for 5 or 10 minutes. You know, sometimes while I'm cooking and for a few minutes, nothing needs me, everything's doing its own thing in the oven or whatever, and I like to go and just sit in devotion. Of course, I feel that all of my time spent with the 7 steps is devotion. The reading and writing, the going back and reading the journal, what I'm doing right now, the sharing and pal talk, all of that is devotion. I consider it devotion on Wednesday afternoons when I go and sit with an animal at the zoo. That somehow feels like devotion for me, just that beingness. So one thing that I'm making sure I have time for in my day is just devotion, because that feels helpful. As Sri Nisargadatta is saying, that purifies the mind. At the same time, there are other things that I knew needed to come out of my life. And believe it or not, one of those things was talking to my friends. It's not that I don't talk to my friends at all, but it has just really dropped down to, you know, from, you know, like, I don't know, if we had a meter, you know, maybe it was up at the 90% level and now it's dropped down to the 5% level. And that's because even though most of my friends are on the spiritual path, when I get talking to my friends, what really comes up, and this may happen in your circles too, so you may know that, what really comes up in conversation are the problems that they perceive in the world. Whether it's problems with their children, problems with finances, problems with roommates, problems with spouses, problems with job. What really comes up in conversation are the problems. And then where the conversation tends to go is into suggestions of what might resolve those problems. And I know that's not helpful. In fact, I made a post in Facebook just the other day. Again, it's like today's lesson. Only God's plan for salvation will work. I made a post in Facebook the other day that said something about, you know, seeing that the world is not real is the answer. Not thinking that the world is real and then trying to solve its problems. And again, that doesn't mean I'm not going to make this phone call this afternoon after I coordinate with my friends and make whatever changes we need to make to our Delta flight. It just means that as I step through what needs to be done, I'm going to do that with as little discussion and as little thought as possible. Because somehow when we get together, either in our conversations or when we get together, you know, with our chatter in our mind, we look at it from all tons of angles, all tons of stories arise around it. It just gets to be this mess that is the opposite of purifying the mind. So I'm staying out of that, both in conversation with my friends. If they want to talk about their problems to me, I do not ask them not to. That doesn't feel right either. It doesn't feel right to say, hey, look, I'm in this year of silence and I don't want you talking to me. So if they contact me and they say they want to talk to me, I let them. You know, I'll go for a walk and talk with them or whatever. But what's happening for me while they are talking is that literally my mind is focused on just being while they talk, forming no opinions at all, having no ideas regarding solutions, just being the present of beingness and letting them talk until they're done talking. That feels much healthier than getting involved and saying, oh yeah, I see what you mean. Well, have you thought about this? Have you tried this? That doesn't feel right for me anymore. And so I'm not doing that now. So again, number 95, devotion purifies the mind by pulling it into the heart. Therefore, time spent in devotion each day is valuable to awakening. Allow this most precious time each day. Reduce to elimination time spent in ego feasting activities, such as meaningless conversational chatter and meaningless mind wandering or mind and personality focus. Ego feasting activities go counter to awakening, and so they are not wanted now. And you can scroll down and to the left and click on number 96, and we do have some changes in people in the room, so I will post the link to number 96. And I'm going to read from the book, Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj, quote number 96. All thinking is in duality. In identity, no thought survives. Again, he said, all thinking is in duality. In identity, no thought survives. All right, here is what I came to after contemplation of that. Thinking names things. Thinking divides. Therefore, thinking is inherently dualistic. Deep peace of self is not thinking, although it has been called thought with a capital T. The one primal thought that is the deep ocean of existence, the ongoingness of all that is, the ever-present now. Dive into capital T thought with intuitive feeling attention. Listen to, feel, and watch this depth ocean source. And then there's a note at the bottom that says, inquiry into the source of thinking guides to this depth source. Since each thought must ultimately lead here through its beginningness and endingness. One thing that Danielle and I were able to see easily once we just took a bit of time to inquire into it, one afternoon we just kind of asked the question, you know, where do thoughts come from? And we saw they come from nothing. I mean, there's nothing, and then there's a thought. It comes from nothing. And where does the thought go when we're done with it? It goes back to nothing. And it didn't take, I mean, it only took seconds. Once we asked this question, it only took seconds to see that with absolute clarity. And so by watching where the thoughts come from and where the thoughts go when we're done with them, well, you could say we find the nothing, the source, the beginningness and endingness, which is the same. And that some people have called thought. A Course in Miracles has called it thought. But it actually isn't, you know, the same as thinking. It's a nothingness from which everything comes. That's what it is. It's funny, I'm looking at an H&R Block ad, and believe it or not, they have the word nothing. It says, we mean nothing. That's how much they're going to charge you if you have an easy tax return. But it's just kind of funny. They're saying, we mean nothing. And that's what we notice, that there's a nothingness there. That is, as this says, it's the deep primal source, right? The deep ocean of existence. And when you follow your thoughts into the nothingness, even if you follow your thoughts into the nothingness for seconds, if there is no thinking, there is also no division. Division does not occur until thinking occurs. And with thinking, you can't help but have division. So it's as Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, all thinking is in duality. In identity, so he's calling this nothingness identity, in identity, no thought survives. All right, let's go ahead and scroll on down and to the left to number 97. I'll post the link one more time, unless somebody else comes in the room. And I'm going to read from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. The quote is from Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. It is quote number 97 at the top of page 31, and it says, go forth, unburdened with ideas and beliefs. Abandon all verbal structures, all relative truth, all tangible objectives. The absolute can be reached by absolute devotion only. Don't be half-hearted. If anybody watches the posts I make on a daily basis to the journal, you'll notice this was the theme of today's post. This don't be half-hearted was really the theme. Yeah, I'll read that again, Cher. Go forth unburdened with ideas and beliefs. Go forth unburdened with ideas and beliefs. Abandon all verbal structures. All relative truth, all tangible objectives. The absolute can be reached by absolute devotion only. Don't be half-hearted. All right, let's look at the journal entry, number 97. I wrote, disregard everything mind thinks it knows based on any past learning or past experience. Since everything mind thinks it knows is based on past learning and past experience, that means abandon everything mind thinks. Be open with current moment heart as the only guide. Abandon all future goals or desired outcomes. Any future ideal is based on the mind's ideas of who I am, what I like, dislike, etc. Therefore, all future ideals are based on false premises and totally mistaken. current moment heart with no thought for the future is the only true and trustworthy guide. Whenever stories and perceptions of past I know knowledge or future ideals appear in the mind, see them as meaningless vapors of nothing. Return attention to current moment heart. Be fully consistent in this practice. Well, we certainly know the Course Workbook lesson, all I see is the past. But we might think, you know, sometimes when we're looking at future goals, that really we're not looking at the past, we're looking at the future. However, that's not true, and that's the clarity that came to me as I contemplated number 97. I realized that whenever I set a future goal, and it doesn't matter what the goal is, that future goal is based on past learning. You know, if I set a future goal to lose weight, that's based on past learning that says I'm not happy with myself when I'm fat or overweight. Without that past learning, I'm not happy with myself when I'm fat or overweight, the goal of losing weight would not occur. I'm having trouble thinking of future goals because I don't really set a lot of future goals. But I do know that as I looked at this, I really did realize there wasn't a goal that you could come up with that didn't have past in it. And if your future goals have past in it, then it's not current moment heart. When you plan a diet, for example, and plan an exercise program, you know, based on what you've learned about what is good to eat and bad to eat and all of that kind of stuff. Again, it's all based on past learning. Now, I will tell you that I do think I am eating well, and I do exercise right now daily. But the way that looks for me is that when I get up in the morning, I know then what exercises I want to do. I don't have a specific routine that's pre-planned. You know, I get up in the morning and I'll feel to do a certain workout. You know, I have several workouts on DVDs. I'll feel to do a certain workout, or I'll feel to combine a couple of different workouts. It's very current moment. And the same thing with what I eat. I don't have a plan for what I'm going to eat. When we get done here, I know I'll eat because I'm already getting hungry. So I know that I'll be eating in about 15 minutes. I don't know what I'm going to eat in 15 minutes. In 15 minutes, when I'm available to go eat, you know, I will go and look around, and then I will know. Sometimes people get the idea that if you are not planning, then it means that you aren't exercising, aren't eating right. And that may be true for some people, but for some of us, those things happen anyway. When it comes to the Delta flight, you know, the basic inner guidance I received when I asked what to do was just to print out, you know, all the different information I had about it. So I had everything in front of me, both the Tel Aviv flight information, the old Delta flight information, and the new Delta flight information, and then call Delta first, see if they would assist for all of the flights, even the ones booked through Expedia. And beyond that, just stay in the moment. And that's what I did when I was on the phone with them this morning. I described the issue. And, you know, they told us there were no other flights that day to get us on. And so then I asked, a question came to my mind. And I asked the question, well, can you get us a hotel voucher since the schedule was changed by 3 hours? And the lady went and talked to her supervisor and came back, and the answer was no. She said, what we can give you is a full refund. You know, and then the thought came, well, really, if, you know, we only need a refund for that one-way flight, and then maybe we can find another way back. Can you give us that, a half refund instead of a full refund? And the answer came back, no, all we can do is give you a full refund. You know, and then the next question came, well, what about if we wanted to pay for the hotel? Could you get us out the next morning? Yes, we could do that. And just by asking questions, at least I came up with my options, and now I have to go to the friends with the options. But there wasn't, I didn't make the phone call with an idea in my mind, this is what they have to do for me. And therefore, there was no demanding, there was no getting upset, there was no, you know, there was no idea of what the outcome should be. There was just a knowing that, you know, this is something that needs to be taken care of, and going in and taking care of it one step at a time. You know, again, some people get the idea that you can't handle everyday living things without planning. But my experience is that's not true. My experience is when you drop the plans, the everyday living actually just unfolds spontaneously and easily. You know what workout to do if you're going to work out. You know what eating to do if you're going to eat. There have been days when I didn't eat. There have been days when the current moment guidance led me into fasts, but typically there's eating. If you're working some kind of an apparent issue, you know, there's step-by-step guidance, what to do, what questions to ask, what to do next. And just step-by-step-by-step, staying in the current, things unfold in the way they're going to unfold. And since you had no specific desired outcome, since you had no attachment based on what you thought you needed in order to be happy, based on past learning, then there also is just no frustration. Everything is accepted. So all future goals, all future ideals, all desired outcomes actually come from past learning of what we think we need to be happy, which means, again, it's false self stuff, because true self is just always happy. So, disregard everything mind thinks it knows based on any past learning or past experience. Since everything mind thinks it knows is based on past learning and past experience, that means abandon everything mind thinks. Be open with current moment heart as the only guide. Abandon all future goals or desired outcomes. Any future ideal is based on the mind's ideas of who I am, what I like, dislike, etc. Therefore, all future ideals are based on false premises and totally mistaken, because again, I'm not that person. So I'm reinforcing the idea that I am with my future ideals. Current moment heart, with no thought for the future, is the only true and trustworthy guide. Whenever stories and perceptions of past, I know, knowledge, or future ideals appear in the mind, see them as meaningless vapors of nothing. Return attention to current moment heart. Be fully consistent in this practice. So you can pick up the phone and call Delta Airlines and begin to ask questions and watch it unfold without having an idea of how it's supposed to work out. All right. Let's scroll down and to the left, and we'll click on number 98. And I think Joe entered the room, so I will give the link in the room. There's the link to number 98, and I will read number 98 from the book. Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj said, "Too much analysis leads you nowhere. There is in you the core of being, which is beyond analysis, beyond the mind. Again, he said, too much analysis leads you nowhere. All right, let's look at number 98. It's a little long, so if we don't feel like we finished it today, we'll start here again tomorrow. But we'll read it. Analysis comes from thinking. It is based on past false perceptions that are believed to have valuable meaning now. However, because these perceptions are based on a false idea of who I am and what is true, they are absolutely confused. Any decision based on absolute confusion is absolutely confused. It only continues the propagation of untrue ideas and perceptions as if they were true. The proper response to any perceived dilemma is, okay, here we go. The proper response to any perceived dilemma is, forget all seeming knowledge based on past learning and past experience. If necessary, look at the mind and see those mistaken ideas first. When it is seen clearly that the ideas are based on past false ideas about who I am and what is true, drop them out of a desire to know only truth. If future ideals or desired outcomes did not fall away automatically, look again to see what past knowledge is still being seen as meaningful. When the deluded past is fully disregarded, future ideals evaporate. Because they are based on seeming knowledge acquired through believing deluded ideas. Once mistaken knowledge is released and false ideas fall away, check current moment heart with intuitive feeling and listen there. So again, a very simple example, my Delta dilemma of the day. There were a couple of thoughts. Remember, the one thought I told you was the story that came up that I needed to call Expedia for Danielle and Susie and I and resolve it with Expedia, and then I had to call Delta with Jasmine. And there was a fear thought that the same answer would not come from both sources. Well, that idea that I had to call Expedia came from past knowledge, because there was a time when Danielle's flight time got changed, and I can't remember what airline she was with, but we called the airline to try and resolve it, and the airline said, since you did this with Expedia, you have to call them. So that past knowledge is what created that fear story. Oh no, I'm going to have to call Expedia for these three and Delta for that one, and it's not going to work out the same. Now the funny thing is, as I mentioned, I let go of that story and I did ask for guidance, and my guidance was just to call Delta. And I remember, I even sat here for a second, but I know they're going to tell me I have to call Expedia. And I thought, nope, call Delta. Well, you know what? I called Delta, and Delta never told me I had to call Expedia. They're helping with all of this. So you see, that past knowledge did not matter at all. It wasn't truly knowledge. It was an experience that happened probably with another airline at another time, right? And it was just trying to create a fear story and trying to create an upset, but it did not apply. My current moment guidance was just call Delta. And I did that, and things seemed to be going fine. Again, another past knowledge that maybe tried to be born, but really it didn't even get born into half a thought, was something about customer service. The idea of, they made this change, they have to fix it the way I want them to. That idea tried to be born, and I let that one go immediately. You know, way before it was even truly born. But if that idea had been born and I had attached to it, then I could be very upset thinking, you have to do this for me because you screwed this up. You know, I'm the customer. You know, I'm in the innocent victim here, right? But that idea was not brought in either. And so again, I'm able to just call, ask questions, get answers, and in some way it is going to unfold. And we'll find out the answer to that as it happens. So my time is up now, so I will stop now, and then tomorrow we'll see whether we want to start again with this or move on. We'll see what tomorrow's current moment guidance is. Thank you, everyone. I will be here at noon Eastern time tomorrow. Bye.